Hi, and thanks so much for listening for this presentation of the Dad Bod Odd Pod. Don't ask about the name, I lost a bet. For this go around, I wanted to introduce a brand new idea to you. I have been sitting on this idea for around 17 years, and now that I have the technology, the close friends, and some of the means available to produce this, I want to start sharing with you ideas that I have for a actual play TTRPG podcast. This isn't a new idea. The chief difference between this one and other podcasts like it is that this engine was specifically designed for streaming. It helps streamline content, combat, and helps you get involved with telling the story as well. So, for this first episode, I wanted to give you a behind-the-scenes look at the full podcast, keeping in mind that this is a very rough iteration, that there will be some edits still coming forward, and that as more means come available, we'll be able to devote more to sound effects and musical score in the background. For now, just take a listen and enjoy the first episode of Eshelbel Tolls. The following presentation is rated energy drink for adult themes, violence, and language. Parents, while we strive to make this a family-oriented podcast, please use your best discretion when listening with your kids. Eshelbel Tolls is an actual play podcast featuring a TTRPG engine designed specifically for streaming. This is a living, breathing story that grows and evolves week to week, with special guests, evil tyrants, and dark forces behind the scenes. You never know what stories will be revealed. Let's return to the land of Eshelbel. That's how long you've been holed up in the Druids' camp. It's been said that half-giants are descended from Belgar, Doom King, god of fire and destruction. A once proud race with a burning passion and vigor, you've watched them struggle over the past few days to keep warm as they stumble in packs between their hot springs, trying to keep their own flocks and one another from freezing out here on the tundra. They're vagabonds. They're unwilling participants of war. You learn from the history books, the stories, and the gossip that ripples throughout the entire land that their side lost. But you never actually saw it. You never really understood it until you looked a giant in the eyes. It's in this place that you realize the sky and the earth are barely distinguishable from one another. The earth spreads with gentle drifts and crests of the driven snow, and the duller white of the snowstorm above consumes everything else. It's colorless. It's full of motion and momentum, and yet the satisfaction of progress on your journey hides just beyond a fight, a battle, an uphill struggle as you crawl through the snow that's as deep as your knees. As mercenaries, you know your job. You're here to escort someone. You and your small traveling party are heading to a specific location nearby. So specifically, you're hired to assist a scientist in his research, right? But there's nothing here to examine or protect from. This is an empty expanse. With your boots carving through the snow beneath you, your mind starts to drift back to what brought you here. Now, Aurora, I'd like for you to take time to introduce your character and potentially what they could be wearing. At this point, clothing doesn't offer any sort of mechanical advantage, so you feel free to describe how they are dressed.
All right. So, she's a bit standoffish, strunk, although it doesn't look like she should be. There is this very light build, but very strong-bodied mushroom lady.
Mm-hmm.
She has a giant red mushroom hat, which is covered by a massive shield. Her name is Amanita. For those who know of her race, Amanita Floydes is known as Deathcap.
Oh, dude.
She wears some light armor, And she has some pretty battle-worn, pretty well-used gauntlets. You can tell she's not really one for weapons. She'd rather get it done hand-to-hand.
Fisticuffs. Well done. Okay. Thinking on your story mechanic now, I want you to think back to what would have driven you forward at this point. You've been traveling, you've been with this camp of druids for 17 days, and this is the first day out of camp that you've had to leave. The entire time, it's been snow, and snow, and snow.
Oh, I'm tired.
So you would be tired.
What her drive is that she's looking to build the ultimate shield.
Mm.
Because she's from a very delicate race, it's often an occurrence that her race would probably be attacked or, you know, taken advantage of for their delicate physique.
Right.
And she wants to build the ultimate shield and prove that they can withstand their own.
That's awesome. I love it. Okay. Do you feel for your character that what motivates that desire in her to find the perfect shield beyond... It's one thing to want to do something for your people, mm-hmm. but I feel like with that specific of a motivation, there was something that happened to your character that prompted that.
Yeah, I would say there was probably a time in her life where she probably could have lost a loved one, probably suffered great harm herself, and it's a drive to be the hero that she never had.
I love it. Okay, keep that in mind. We can circle back to that and continue to play to that as we go forward, because that's your story. Okay, as these feelings burble up within your character's chest and shrouds her mind, a color comes to mind in this vast expanse of white. What would you say that color is?
The color associated with what?
Associated with those feelings of finding the perfect shield, of that loss, mm-hmm. of trying to do her best to make sure that she becomes the hero she never had.
Red.
Red. That red flashes through your mind as you think on that. It flashes like some of the darker days, some of the more violent encounters that you yourself witnessed. And as those images, that color flashes through your mind almost with a splash, you flinch. You shake yourself off and you continue pressing forward. You're hearing the crunch of this thick snow. And off to your right, the both of you hear heavy footsteps that have fallen out of sync with you. Do you look up to see what the noise is?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. I do.
Okay. The both of you look up and meet the gaze of your partner. Who's worked with you for nearly 2 years. So... Hayden, would you do us the honor of introducing your character and their name?
So, my character is a pretty typical human male, about average height, so around like 5'7", 5'8"-ish. He has a very large sword on his back, and that is like a source of pride for him. Because, unlike most other people his size, he can actually swing it around. Aside from that, he has pretty standard chain armor on, underneath a coat that can actually keep him warm, with a kind of tattered cloak that is a constant reminder for him of probably his biggest failure in life.
Mm.
But he doesn't like to talk about it, because nobody likes to talk about failure.
Right.
His name is Bruno. And he has a, while unkempt for now, a beard that you can tell is normally kept very well trimmed.
Can we make it canon that anytime we have a long distance journey where we're just walking for hours, I like hum, we don't talk about Bruno?
Sure.
While we're going.
He literally said you don't like talking about your past, so you could be the person that kind of makes that happen. You've known each other for 2 years. You've worked with each other for 2 years.
So you've probably heard it because it's like, well, if you're going to be working together, you should probably know.
Right. But for those outside of your relationship, that wouldn't happen.
No, yeah.
No. Okay.
At this point, I have not worked out exactly what said backstory is either, so that's also part of the reason why I am not talking about it.
That's all good. That's specifically referencing the story mechanic, or what specifics within that mechanic you need to hone?
Specifics within it.
Okay, perfect.
So, why he has gotten where he is, I just know that it's someone he doesn't like to talk about.
So, for this specific mission, and regarding your story specifically, would your story have an effect on why you're here and motivating you to press forward through this blizzard?
Good question. I'm not 100% sure on that.
That's all good.
Probably something to do with just finding additional purpose in life.
Mm.
That'd be my guess, at least.
Big wolf. That's great. Okay. So you're aware, as you're looking back and forth, and at any time, if you'd like to, just feel like, raise your hand if I'm not prompting roleplay. If you'd like to interact with one another, that's great. Make this feel like a real session. I'm going to be focusing on, like, looking at mechanics, but if you want to roleplay, please feel free. The rest of the party that you are aware of, but at this point, there's a gust of wind that blows fresh powder into your faces. It's bitter, it's hard, and it honestly hurts because it's that strong. So you duck your head again. You are managing this easier than you, Bruno. But you're aware. Would you care about the well-being of the rest of your party? Or just the guy you've been hired to follow?
I would say my character cares about the well-being of the rest of the party.
Would you look back behind you to see how they're doing after that gust?
Yeah.
Okay. So as that happens, you look over your shoulder. You see... There's a cast of characters with you. And it's not small. There's a merchant. There's a squat little scale folk, kind of a lizard folk. He's as short as he is wide. He's a big boy. He's a chunky boy.
Oh.
He refuses to speak for the cold. And he tags along to scout out new traversal paths because he's a merchant. He's trying to find the easiest path to get from point A to point B. He knows there are other frequently visited sites for the nomadic tribes that are up here, and he's trying to figure out where to go next. You also spot two that are doing a little bit better than this poor lizard folk, this poor scale folk. There's a mother and daughter, wolf folk, with dingy gray and white fur, speckled brown and black. These are the record bearers, and they are chronicling your journey because this is a significant adventure that they're going on right now.
Brave Sir Robin, brave Sir Robin, bravely ran away.
They offer clerical support in many ways, but they offer clerical support to the tribal matriarch, Ulatan Thera, who is also with you. She is a construct with glowing emerald eyes. And in contrast to all the blanket of white around you, not a single snowflake is able to rest on her. Her armor and what you might call clothing, which is essentially vines that seem to be growing out of her to cover her. She's very humanoid. But her clothing of ropes, these vines that are covering her, is keeping her unnaturally warm. The magic within her is causing the snow to hit and immediately steam off. So as you're walking in this line, you can interact with these guys, by the way. I want you to know that you can do that. As you're walking in a line now that you guys are starting to come up, you two are leading kind of the front of the line and kind of making a path for everyone behind you.
I would like to volunteer that I, like, bend my head down and I'm, like, snow plowing.
I love it. Okay. Actually,
Bruno goes here and goes, Amanita, would you like some help? Would you like me to, like, use you as a shovel?
Got it.
Do me a favor and roll for brawn.
With my D4?
With your D4, yeah.
That's a 4.
You are chugging through this snow. And I would say that with that good of a roll, because I look at the not just the numerical value, but also the extremity of the value. Because it's the top number on your die, it's a critical. You are plowing through the snow, and you're actually making double time now. Before, you were doing about half pace. Now you're doing... regular pace, almost getting to double time.
Nice.
So, great job. You can I will say that you haven't seen this guy yet, but he is at the back of the line, grunting and groaning, whining. And over the past 17 days, really month, that you guys have known this individual that has been paying your wage, you've liked him less and less. I'll just say that much. So as you're walking in this line, you with your head down and you following close behind, the winds are pelting you from left to right as you continue north. But you notice the winds don't seem to strike you as hard. The snowflake needles that pelt this side of your face aren't hitting you as hard for some reason. And I would say that you would notice this more because a massive figure has just walked up beside you.
Oh.
Now, because of that, he's not touching you, reaching for you, anything. He's walking in stride with you. Mm. And because you see him, you can see only the broad back of his shoulders. They are covered by a thick white hide of fur beneath the layer of snow and ice already there. His bald head steams from the exertion of the hike. His ears are hardly pink at all. He walks in step with you, and you get the feeling like he's trying to keep you from getting the brunt of the storm. So keep in mind, he's not walking behind you in this path. He is blazing his own. Not to mention, he's about 7 feet tall. His eyes are fixed ahead. Now, while you might be mercenaries, this half-giant is your guide. He's agreed to do so at risk of shaming his tribe. But what shame could the service of a stranger bring the chief of this tribe? To say nothing of his enormous size, you look at him, and on multiple occasions, I would imagine you, Bruno, would have sized him up. His forearms are as thick as your thighs.
He's a big boy.
This, you know, is Vorgon. He's the head of the Everfrost Druids, the ones that have been hosting you over the past few weeks. At this point, I'm going to let you guys continue moving through this storm. I might have you roll occasionally, but if you'd like to roleplay, now's an opportunity. Any one of these guys, you can reach out to. And I'll introduce certain mechanics if you'd like to try certain things with them socially.
I'm just like swinging my arms. Just keep digging, digging, digging. What do we do? We dig, dig.
Bruno is struggling to not kind of laugh a little bit as he sees this small mushroom person.
I would imagine that the young wolf girl in the back would be snickering a little bit as well. And you hear her mother, "Sweetheart, hush. They're leading us on. Be courteous." That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Trying not to smack her upside the head.
Right. Everything in her power is just because they're walking in front of her boss is right behind her, the matriarch, the warforged. So as you're singing this song, Vorgon looks down at you with a little twinge in his eyebrow. What song is that you're singing?
I just came up with it. Don't you have a song in your heart?
And he kind of blinks at that. And for all the world, like, as broad as this guy is, some of his features are kind of exaggerated too. So you from behind, if you look, just turning your head up, you'd be able to see this. But you from behind, listening to this, you can see even his broad cheeks crease up as he grins. He gives a slow nod down, up, down, and back to center. You can say that. And he continues to push through. Now this goes on for another 2 hours. If at any time you want to stop, being the bulldozer here, I will allow that.
I'm going to say she probably takes a break after 2 hours.
Yes.
Yeah. Just such a 3,000 years when people do that, such a crick in the neck.
That's awesome.
When Amanita starts getting tired, Bruno picks up the pace a little bit, taps her on the back and goes, "Hey, let me take over for a bit. We're not going to go as fast, but you need a break."
Ah, much appreciated.
I hope I can offer some help as well.
That would also be appreciated.
Let's do this. So the two of you will begin trudging forward. If you'd like to have a rest, I will argue that for sake of information, if you were to perform something like that again, this is the first time we've played a game like this, so I don't want to do this to you now. But going forward, if you were to go for any longer than even 30 minutes, I would have you roll to see if you start losing your brawn points.
Yeah.
One of the mechanics of the game that I'm trying to ensure, and this is for the audience's reference, if you want to provide a feat of strength, whether that's endurance or trying to hold open a door that's collapsing, you have to spend your own stat modifiers in order to accomplish that. So you have to kind of be wary of what you're going to be doing. You can restore that once you have a short rest, we could call it. But yeah, just so the audience is aware, that's how this is going to work.
Or a breather.
Yeah, a breather.
I need a breather.
Yeah. So you're trudging through. Vorgom is at the front. You are behind. You are, because for whatever reason, he is just taking the initiative. He is plowing through this. You almost notice, if you look down, his feet, he's conscientiously using the sides of his feet. He turns his feet wide and shovels snow out of the way as he goes. He is built for life up here.
Bruno sees that and just shakes his head, like, incredible. Then he looks at his own feet and sees some of the snow that's left over, and he's just, well, I gotta do something. And so he kind of, like, crouches down a bit and is just, like, pushing it off to the side to help those behind him be able to trudge through easier.
Mm-hmm. At this point, I would argue that the wolf folk girl has kind of bobbed and weaved her way past the lizard folk behind, the scale folk behind you, and has wrapped her arms around your middle. And it's not saying anything. She's just hugging you. And I'd like for you to make an awareness roll.
Oh no. I have a -1 in that. Four.
Nice.
Total of three.
You get the sense, based off of your empathy, that she's expressing appreciation, but there's also a little bit of embarrassment because of what her mom was saying earlier. She's hugging you in appreciation, but is nervous about what her mother's going to say.
So I imagine that I have very small fingers. I'm just pat on top of the head.
Oh, all the pats.
Just reassurance of, they're there. I'm not sure what to do in this situation, but...
That's awesome. All of a sudden, Vorgum stops short. He holds up a fist to the rest of the party, and you know from having experienced getting to his village, he being your guide there as well, that is a signal to stop and go silent.
Given that I've kind of got my head down, kind of plowing the snow out, I don't notice right away, so I accidentally bump into his cap. Look up really fast, and I see the signal.
Mm-hmm.
Very quiet, very fast.
Alanita's right. Going to quickly crouch, which is going to umbrella over the child.
Yeah. So with that in mind, someone at the back of the row goes, "Ah! What are we waiting for?
Bruno,
I didn't pay any of you to screw around and waste my time. I'm going to catch my death out here if you don't hurry."
Bruno quickly turns around in the middle of him saying all that and gives a quick, like...
And as you're doing that,
with a death glare, too.
Yeah. Like, the one speaking is Anthony Vertil. He is an elf. And as you're looking at him, you see the scarf wrapped around his head. For whatever reason, he is unable to keep his wide-angled, very unnaturally long pointed ears, even for an elf, inside of that wrapping. They are blood red. The guy is miserable. And unfortunately, even from the back of the line, I'll say that you both, if you look at him, notice his scarf under his nose is wet all the way down. He's just not a happy boy. So as he's saying this, he finishes, "I'm going to catch my death out here if you don't hurry." The scale folk, right behind you, peers over his shoulder and goes, "Nothing wrong with that," as quietly as he can.
And Bruno also, like, looks at, gives him that look, like,
"Yeah, So with both of that, he's pissed at the scale folk, but he looks at you, your hired gun. He rears up a little bit, puffs out his chest, and then just
Bruno relents. Bruno gets really close and he's like, I'm not saying you're wrong to complain about his whining, but we're in a spot right now where we need to be quiet.
Yeah.
Amanita just kind of looks at you with that knowing look of, so what are you doing?
he was whispering as lowly as he
could. Yeah, that's fair. So, as you guys are going back and forth, and like as the energy is picking up, even if you're quiet, people can sense that. You know, when you're arguing, there's a vibe.
Yeah.
Vorgom literally over his shoulder, be still. And everyone shuts up.
Just immediately stops.
The matriarch, the construct, shuffles forward. And you can tell, even with her rope clothing, she also has a staff that is this growing testament. It's almost like it's a wood staff gnarled and like spines at the top or like where the branches would have been of a tree. This was a small tree. But it has white lichen growing in the crevices throughout. And she uses that staff to hobble forward and go catch up to Vorgom. And she says, my chief, what do you hear on the winds? We must go now. The Aether has spoken to me. The winds carry a strong swell that will blow itself out in an hour. They'll have a few hours more of clear skies before the back end of the storm hits. And at this point, Antony, so that's why he's pausing. It's not necessarily a danger, but that he is stopping short because he is sensing something spiritual. And that is the impression that he gained from listening. So knowing that the group kind of, are you scared? No one challenges him though. He's 7 feet tall and he's the chief. So no one says anything.
He knows what he's talking about.
Except for Antony.
Oh no.
About time you arrived at your sense. Let's get the move on before the wind tells you to go home. Vorgom spins around and with a single meaty finger pointing at the smaller man. Take care of how you speak of the spirits. They're fond of mortals, but they serve the giants. He himself is a half-giant. Keep that in mind. By the way, for context, you would know that the giants are mythic figures. There are four, and they each hold absolute power over one of the four main branches of elemental force. The ones that descend, these guys descend from Vorgom, Doom King, who is master of fire, which is why he can go through a storm and not be frozen solid. So all of that to say, the spirits are fond of mortals, but they serve the giants, and they only tolerate us. On these plains, we are at the giants' mercy. Antony, as giants this time, eh, big boy? Ugly? Stupid? Your people's legends are only that. Those legends are our kin. Go ahead.
As he says that too, once Vorgom finishes his thing, Bruno actually draws his sword, and this is where everyone like really can tell just how strong he is with this thing. One handing it, puts it in Antony's face. I agreed to take you where you needed to go. I did not agree to hear you whine and complain about something that could kill you with a blink of its eye. I suggest you change your attitude.
This is where, if you look at your character sheet there, you'll notice a grayed out box called stances. Stances are things that you can conscientiously choose and verbalize to the DM, Karma, and to let them know that is your intent. So rather than the DM saying, make an intimidation roll, you can literally say, I want to come off as strong when it comes to the social stances.
Okay. Yeah, that's probably exactly what it is then. He's coming off very strong.
Okay.
Very authoritative.
Awesome.
As he says, in essence, shut up, Antony.
Right. Antony, at this point, he doesn't flinch. He's shivering, but he's not flinching. He actually stops shivering for a moment as he narrows his eyes at you, takes a breath, cocks his head to the side and offers a little grin. You can see it even through his scarf around his face. Fine. Why don't we proceed then? And at that point, Gorgon rests a hand over your shoulder. Keeping in mind, it's only two fingers that rests on your shoulder, but he's doing it. It's all right. Let's move on. And he bends down to you, understanding the temperament. The sooner we get you out of here, the sooner we're all free of him.
Bruno just like, he gives like this like snort laugh, trying very hard to not laugh hard, just like that.
Yeah.
And then waiting for Gorgon to pull his arm away, he very casually pulls his sword back and just hooks it back onto his back. Right.
And it's not a sheath. It has to be a hook because it's so big.
Yeah.
Yeah, got it. All right. Okay. There's a couple other bits of dialogue that I would include in there, but for sake of moving forward through this. Also, how's our time going right now? 30 minutes. Nice. Okay. Whew. So with that moment, I would even say that the small wolf folk girl kind of like looks up to you for reassurances, kind of checks back with her mom.
Just
more pats.
Gentle pats. There. Don't bite me. She doesn't say that. But that's her thought process.
Yeah, totally. This girl is oblivious. And you get the sense that she and her mother would never cause harm.
Oh, it's just the intrinsic, you know, most people see a mushroom and they think food.
Right, totally. Okay, I got you.
Because bite equal love.
Yes.
It's true.
It's just not. Boop a snoot. Just boop a snoot, it's okay.
Can okay. I boop her snoot?
If you want to.
I boop her snoot.
She... If a wolf could blush, she is, like, giddy with that. It's one of her most favorite experiences. And you hear a gentle laugh from behind, and you know it's her mother. So what you just did culturally for their people was very positive and very, very well received.
I thought you were about to say something else, and I was like, oh, no.
No. So it's not like romantic, it's almost familial.
Well,
without even knowing it, because she approached you first, too.
Right.
And because you offered the boop of the snoot.
Thought you were about to say, like, I had incurred the wrath of a thousand suns.
No. No, the mother's happy that that happened. She's totally cool with it. She thinks it's sweet.
Oh, good.
Okay. So your party continues to trek across this tundra. And again, same thing. Swirls of snow that are pelting you on your left side. It's not letting up. And from what you know of what Vorgom told you of the storm, you know it should be ending soon. But it hasn't. You notice that the white around you over time has slowly, almost imperceptibly shifted from white to gray, and after a few hours to black as the sun sets off to the west to your far left. It's dark enough now that the wolf folk woman, the mother behind you, has lit a lantern that bathes your backs and the snow around you in a golden light. And as numb as the weather's made your faces, you can sense that the cold isn't biting your cheeks as hard now. And for the past few hours, you guys have been trudging forward. It's almost robotic for you, not to be punny when it comes to the actual construct behind you. But you finally notice that the wind stopped. And you finally feel just that little extra surge of energy. So you're not fighting against all the elements anymore. Now it's just going through the snow. You see that you two have crossed into an opening between two short mountains that seem to have been eroded away, carved by the wind and storms themselves. Tall, spiny mountains. Beyond that, You look out at the horizon, because you know the snow's not falling anymore. You look out over the horizon. It is not difficult to see. Jet black storm clouds with blue lightning arcing within is coming in your direction from north to south.
I don't like that.
This isn't a fast storm. It is black clouds, but it is not a fast storm. But it is coming in your direction. Vorgon has not changed his pace. He's noted it. Gives himself a little nod. And is still moving forward. The hike's difficult. It's snow. It's deep. It's still to your knees. And maybe even a little taller with the storm. So you set yourselves to keeping a good pace. You see the snow glittering on the ground. Not just with gold, but now with flecks of blue? Green? Purple? Do either of you guys look up?
Yes.
Okay. So with the lighting happening, an aurora borealis arcs across the sky.
I make me happy. I sing a happy song.
Name drop. Play your name drop. All right.
Bruno looks at it and goes, that's something you don't see every day. That's something you don't see every day.
Yeah. Then Vorgon pauses again. He offers a different signal. Not one of warning, but just one to just general stop. I'll stop. And he says, turns and looks at the rest of the party, nods with a little smile. We're here. And he turns and he looks out over this small little inlet. You see that now you've walked. You've gone further than you were before when you were trudging through the snow and you saw this color on the ground. You are at the base of a glacier. And this glacier hasn't melted naturally. It's not rounded off like most you would see in like National Geographic. It is a sheer cliff that has been broken off. And this thing is probably in excess of 30 feet tall. Which in and of itself is impressive, but the fact that it was broken by an outside force. You don't know where the pieces are either. You just know that it's been sheared off the side. He tells each of you to prepare. Now, one of the things that I will have you do as you're going forward, you see the glacier off in the distance. I'm gonna have each of you make an awareness check. Actually, wits. This will be your wits check for this one.
Right now?
Yes.
Wits, is that smarts?
That's under wits. Oh, sorry, instinct.
Instinct.
Instinct. We did change that one, so I apologize if I'm using terminology I've been sitting on for the past few months.
I got a two.
Two?
I got a four.
Four. Okay. Four. I will say that you are on par with Vorgom's instincts. And as you're going by, you've gone between those two mountains, those tall, spiny mountains from earlier. You've hooked to the right around the end of the one mountain. And it's just one isolated mountain range. There's one more to your left now as you come and turn to face the glacier. Your instincts. You feel something in the air. The skin on the back of your neck starts to prickle. And you, because you rolled a two, you have to have an outside help to have the same instinct as him. You see that some of the hairs, even outside of the wind blowing around, you see the hairs on this little wolf folk girl's fur start to stand on end. Not because she's scared, but from an external factor. And that's when a lightning strike comes and smashes into the first spiny mountain to your left. And this is not a stable structure. As it hits, it is starting to collapse towards you guys. The glacier's over there. That is where Vorgon wants to take you. He says only one thing. Run! What are you doing?
I scoop the girl.
Okay.
I'm running.
Okay.
Is there anyone nearby me that I could probably scoop up?
At this point, the only one that would be small enough to do that is going to be the scale folk, who at this point has just been completely silent, except to call out the elf. And Anthony.
Isn't the scale folk like tall?
He's a short and stout boy.
Oh, okay.
Short and stout boy. So even if he's kind of thicker, I will allow you to pick him up.
Yeah, so Bruno grabs him and goes, come on, man.
Which one? The scale folk?
The scale folk.
At this point, Anthony says, what about me?
You got legs? Use them.
Bruno says that in unison with Amanita.
Great.
Especially because Anthony is actually tall.
Yeah. I will remind you for this situation that you have access to both your undercover and your overkill roles. Overkill is something that gives extra oomph to what you're doing in your roles.
Are we running downhill?
You are running downhill.
I would like to use my shield as a sled.
So you're removing it from your head.
Yeah.
Is that correct? Okay. That's totally fair. I will allow you to do that, and I will let you make two rolls. Take the higher of the two. This is your enhanced roll. You do this as well for movement. Both of you are rolling for movement.
Four?
Okay, so take that one.
Should I roll against him?
If you'd like. If you get a crit, I'm going to let you choose to roll again just for flavor.
I also got a four.
Nice. Okay. So a three.
Which is really good because I have a minus one.
Yeah. Because you've picked her up, I will say that because you chose to do something improvisational and to use something to your advantage, that is going to cover her as well. So it's not necessarily that you have a super advantage. You are covering her because you're still trying to carry her as well. But because you did that, you are now propelled downhill through the snow. Everyone is stumbling, rolling. And actually, let me take a couple of these as well to ensure that I have green for our construct, blue for the elf, red for Vorgon. We have a couple others. Let's make this be wolf. And we will have this one be... The flashiest one that I have is going to be for Anthony.
Fitting. Of course.
Okay. So wolf folk sees her daughter being scooped up, and the first thought is just, oh no. But knowing that you're helping, she is focusing all of her efforts. She's sprinting downhill. She got a four. Let's see. Vorgom is actually doing decently well. He's doing above the average and is keeping up in pace with you. Everyone... else, oh shoot, the Warforged is falling slightly behind. But I will say that you picked up the scale folk, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I will say that with a three, I will allow him to not have any encumbrance on you as you're running.
I appreciate that.
It's funny enough, seeing this mountain run, literally, because of the lightning strike, it caused the mountain to collapse and careen towards you. Because of that adrenaline shot... Anthony, bugger that he is scared to death and is sprinting after you all, and is almost starting to come over some of the last people in the line. Wolf folk and you care. Well, you're on your sled, so you're further down. But everyone, like you and the scale folk, are completely almost being lapped by him at this point. You're all sprinting, and you feel it before you hear it. A shockwave goes through the earth, and then. This the mountain itself, tons, metric tons of stone and ice careen into the valley between the two. You can't go back that way, but you know that there's other options. You're not stranded, but you know that ahead of you is your path, your mission. Have you stopped running at this point?
I look over my shoulder to make sure no one got crushed.
With these rolls, no one got crushed. No one got even close. Everyone was able to keep pace. Vorgom is still ahead of you all. He's got the longest stride in the bunch.
I'm halfway tempted, like, if I started feeling myself dragging behind it all, like, I might get crushed. My sword is big enough, like, it's wide.
I'm yeah.
You're like, could I potentially pull that out and, like, start snowboarding down on it?
I would say that would require a roll, but that is, I love the thinking.
He probably wouldn't do that right away because it's like, okay, this would 100% be the last resort because I don't know if I trust my balance on this.
Right.
Especially in the heat of the moment.
Yeah.
But it is something that at least crossed his mind. It's just right. Like,
Okay.
My shield was a practical thought.
Yours was.
Yes.
Mine's not as practical, but it's still one of those like, if I need to move faster, this might... Sliding might work better than running.
Okay. So you guys come up to the base camp. Now you know that this glacier, having seen it from a distance, you know that it's unnaturally formed. And that's why you're here. So you also know that you were not the first people to come. You know that your boss has made arrangements to meet people here. And what you assume is base camp, where a tent is, you also see a, over to the side, you see another structure of some kind. Looks like there's a rope hanging down from it. There's also a strange spiny formation of ice that seems like all the spines fan out in one direction from an original source at the ground. But almost
like an altercation.
Yeah. So it looks like there was some kind of ice formation of that way, but as far as anything else, you don't see anything out of the ordinary. You also don't see movement. You don't see people. Vorgom, at this point, is hands over knees, kind of gaining his breath back, stands up straight, hands on hips, and is kind of surveying the area as you guys are jogging to catch up. You kept up with him, and I'm sure you can describe what you're doing.
I also had a four.
You were there, yes. I will say that the two of you actually made it down to the camp with him.
And I'm not even out of breath. I'm on my shield.
Yeah.
I'm seeing a lack of movement. Bruno just, damn.
Yeah. I almost imagine as you kind of into a stop on your shield, that you're sitting cross-legged with this little wolf girl sitting in your lap. Her eyes are big, and you're left wondering, because you haven't said a word. You've been sitting there for a little bit as the rest of the group catches up. You don't know if she's terrified of the situation or not. You literally just had a mountain collapse behind you and she is dead silent.
Pats. Answered everything.
At that, she's going to crane her neck up at you and just look you in the eye. Can we do that again?
Yeah, that was really fun, wasn't it?
Yes, that was so... Don't get to do that very often.
Well, probably for your safety.
Yeah. It's kind of boring.
Ah, but you get some excitement sometimes.
I get to read a book every now and then.
Books are good. You learn a lot that way.
And at that, as you're talking to her, Antony stumbles by. Well, the knowledge you can gain in this world is worth nothing unless you know what to do with it. And then he keeps moving forward towards the camp. He's the first one in line now. He's walking towards the camp. And he's beelining it for this large tent structure.
Bruno, after hearing Antony say that, looks over at Vorgom and goes, do you think he knows what to do with it?
As funny as that is, Vorgom remains stoic. He senses something's off with Antony. And you almost feel the bristles on the guy. He's a half giant, he doesn't have bristles, but you feel his energy change as he starts looking out over this area. Something's wrong.
Yeah, I feel it too. I put down the scale of folk, I'm like, glad you made it with us.
Thank you, that would have been real bad. It's kind of more than I bit off I could chew.
And you know that doesn't make sense, but his brain is doing things to him right now, yeah. So.
I'm just like, no, that's fair. I just didn't want you getting crushed with those, I don't mean any offense with this, but those kind of stubby legs, man.
No. Yeah, that's good. No, I appreciate that. And he's just a stuttering, blubbering mess, this poor little scale folk.
As all this happens, though, Bruno just reaches back, unhooks his sword, pulls it out, and goes, let's hope I don't need to use this.
So, I'm going to say that there are... What do you want to investigate first? I'm going to give you three areas you can check out. The first is that spiny ice formation. The next is a large tent that could easily fit more than 20 people in. And that's... It looks pristine. It looks like it hasn't been touched.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to clip and hook my shield back onto my mushroom head.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go investigate the blast.
Okay, one more just so you're both aware of what they're...
Resignated is a word, right?
Yes, well, resigned.
Like it really resonated.
Resonated, yes.
Resonated.
Yeah.
Yeah, no G.
I will say with one more piece of information, there's a structure, that structure with the rope hanging down is also available for inspection. But you want to check out the ice formation.
I want to check out the tent, because as much as the structure with the rope interests Bruno, he does not want to put away his sword.
Yeah, that's fair.
He doesn't trust it.
Okay, so because you had voiced that first, I'll have you go first, Aurora.
Okay.
So as Amanita, you notice that the snowpack here is, it's still the same level of snow, but because it's so fresh, you can tell that this is a well-tread path. The snow underneath this fresh layer, there's a path here, and it's easier for you to traverse. You kind of follow up and around a bend in a path to come to this formation. Now, as you're looking at this, let's see, here we go. This is almost beautiful. It feels like an explosion of water that simultaneously instantly froze. So it's spiny, it's spiky, but it's almost crystalline. And even with the Aurora Borealis, the storm hasn't hit you yet, but with the Aurora Borealis overhead, you can tell that the glittering shades and colors here are just gorgeous. Have you left the wolf girl behind?
I wouldn't force her to come with me, okay. But...
For the sake of this, I would say that her mother at this point has called her back.
Right.
And is trying to stay closer to Vorgom.
Right.
She didn't sign up for this. No one has signed up for this, and they're all uneasy because he is uneasy.
Right.
Because there's no people. Which is good. It's good she's not with you. Because as you peer into this structure, there is a muddled, dark shape inside of this. I would ask for you to roll right now. I want you to roll a... Let's go with...
Move?
Nope.
Oh. Oh, no.
I'm going to leave it to you now. I want you to play to your strengths. How would you like to identify what this shape is using your stats? And I'm giving you the freedom. This is a mechanic in-game that you can use your strengths to identify this.
Is the shape moving?
I would say use your... you can tell if it's moving. It is not moving inside.
Okay. I mean, what does it look like?
At this point, you could break it apart, because I know that you're a brawny kind of a character. You could break it apart and try and see a little bit better.
It's so pretty, though.
It is.
She would appreciate the pretty.
Would you like to try and see, just observe, or would you try to logic your way through what this is?
She would probably look for the best way to get a closer look without breaking the ice.
Okay, so knowing that, I'm actually gonna have you do move for to your advantage. Yeah.
Okay.
Two. So you do peer in closer, and it's delicate. So the minute you let a breath go, one piece falls off. You kind of flinch, and you're like, oh no. But you peer inside. That is the shape of a hand reaching through the ice in line with the spines, as if clawing forward away.
Yeah.
Also, because it's this muddled shape, this darker shape surrounding that hand, that arm, you know that upon impact, the force of this instant freeze was so powerful that it caused this person to suffer a grisly demise at the force of not just the water, but the freezing at the same time.
I'm going to rush back to the group with this information, and I'm going to inform the half-giant.
So, Vorgom, do you do this loud or not?
Quietly.
Okay. So, I would say there's you pushing through the snow. Vorgom is approaching the tent, hasn't touched it because you are going in. And in fact, I'm going to hold off on you for just a moment to get to you. So.
Am I coming back before he enters the tent? Is there a chance that I could maybe intercept him?
I would
him?
Say that this is happening at tandem.
Okay.
So, you go into the tent. Let me check my notes here. Nope, that's not what I wanted. Boom. Fool of a took. Okay, that's F.
I'm thinking Soul Eater with Excalibur.
Yeah. Boom. So, this tent looks pristine, right? You duck your head in, press the outer door sheet in. Nose peeking in. Do you walk inside or do you just stay out and peer in?
I go inside stealthily.
Okay. I will say, give me a movement roll, and if you're going stealthy, that is undercover. So
undercover,
depending,
that's
good. It's good. New system. Who dis?
Right.
Whatever you roll, if you roll high, that is a successful stealth movement.
That's a one total.
That's
ten, minus
okay,
one.
That's great. Your sword, the hilt of your sword, catches on the cloth and yanks and shakes the tent a little bit, disturbing the ice above and cascading around the side.
Like a mouse.
Love it. Nothing happens. But I will argue, as that noise happens, you notice that some of that snow outside, you notice quick motion fall from the ceiling of this tent down to the floor. There is a massive hole in the far corner of the tent that you didn't notice because it's on the opposite side walking forward. It was as if something has ripped away the cloth, and even from this angle, it's as if this tent, which is designed to fit 20 people comfortably, it's as if a corner, the last corner, is completely torn away. You see, silhouetted against the light of the Aurora Borealis, you see cots silhouetted. You see furs as insulation. You see even a dead fire in the center of this place, where a chimney could have reasonably been carved into the tent and likely was. You see no people. You only see trails of red in that snow where the opening of the tent was. And it's trails that stop a few feet after the cloth ends out being torn that direction. So it's I would say it would be easier for you to understand that that likely would have happened as a person was dragged over the cloth or lifted over it.
So seeing that, he still has his sword ready, but he's just going to slowly back out of the tent.
And at that point, Vorgom kind of stoops as well. He has to stoop further than you. But as he does, he kind of whispers in your ear, because he's close enough, "What'd you find?"
"The tent looks like it was ripped into. No one's here, but there are some blood trails leading out to the other side."
And you see him process that for a minute. And you see his eye drift over to the wolf folk mother and daughter. She's looking to him. And you see this nonverbal conversation where she kind of, her eyebrows twinge and she ducks her head. He looks at her and you notice him just. And you see her crumple a little bit. And her daughter looks up. "Mommy, what's going on?" And you see the mother wheel the daughter away and walk a bit up the path. Even if you don't know the specifics of each of these people's lives, you get a sense that there was someone important to her, to both of them, that was in this mission. The last thing you guys can inspect is that structure with a rope hanging off of it. Do you want to inspect that now, or would you like to...
I tell them about the hand.
Okay. So it's at this point that you... how would you communicate that to the group?
I probably, like, motion him down.
To Vorgom? As he stands up and notices you down there and...
"I found a victim."
"A victim?"
"Yes. Likely magical properties. They've been encased in ice. Looks like it was a rather quick and yet painful death. That structure over there, at the very center of it, someone... It looked like they were trying to run away from whoever cast it."
"Right.
I don't know if they were frozen fast enough that maybe you could thaw them and they might still be alive. But all I can see is their hand. And I don't particularly," and I kind of nod back towards the group,
"yeah,
don't want to thaw them out with the young ones around."
"She's, he looks again over in their direction as he talks. "It's a bit worse than that. For now, I think it's best if we wait until the little one is asleep. Then we can inspect more. You see his eyes darting around. You know he's processing all of this. But the longer he thinks, the more his face strains, and the more you feel like this guy is asking one thing in his mind. What in the world are we doing here? And there's even a twinge in this half-giant, this man who to this point has been an elemental force carving his way through the tundra. There is a moment when his brow twitches with the first trace of fear.
Do you know what might have caused this?
There are stories of everything that I've seen so far. I think this is more than a story anymore. There are tales of elemental forces even younger than the giants. Vorgon is the one of fire, the one that warms us and keeps us alive on this tundra. But some of the giants got bored. Some of them created pets. And those pets are not friendly. What we do now, we do quietly. And we spend no longer than an hour. We clear?
I motion towards Loudmouth.
But don't worry. I'll work on him.
All right, then.
And as he straightens, he turns to face Antony, who's actually just disappeared. He is the one now going to inspect this wooden structure. To this point, I would imagine everyone has been kind of on edge and quiet, right? Antony kind of stumbles over, trudging through the snow. He's just done. And he goes to this structure. If any of you are following him with your eyes, or if you're looking and inspecting the structure yourself, I will allow you to do this. You know that this is a crane. This is a simple wood crane. And even behind on the, just in view of the front side of the tent, but behind it, there are stacks of boxes. So you know that people have come here with supplies and sleds to bring boxes up here for this mission to be here for at least a month. But with all this in mind, you know that this crane is pointed in the wrong way. This crane is probably, I'd give it 15 feet tall. It's got pulley systems and thick rope, and this rope runs up, across, and down towards the ground. It goes through the ground in an opening through the ice, born through the ice, that is 30 feet wide and descends into complete darkness.
There's something at the end of that rope.
Antony's walking right to it. Antony is going,
Antony! And I like start shuffling forward.
He doesn't hear you. He's inspecting at this point. He's looking down the hole. As dumb and intolerable as he feels to be, he is very curious. And he's looking, leaning over the hole, doing the whole like inching, like most of his body weight's on his back leg and his other foot's kind of giving him a buffer. As he kind of consciously peeks over the edge. You see him, even from behind, he like struggles to wrench something out of his back pocket, and it's a tiny little notebook. And he like licks the end of like a very short, it's almost this really cheap looking seagull feather quill. He just licks it and starts scribbling. He tries it again, and he's desperate to lick it, but he knows his ink is frozen. It's one of the, it looks like this quill has its own ink inside of it. Like, who does that? But even so, he's just hunched over. What are you guys doing, knowing all of this information, knowing that he's not really engaging with the crane just yet? He's just writing notes.
Amanita is going to try to persuade him to come back to the group with the information of, we've found some troubling, or I guess I get up to him.
Mm-hmm.
Antony, we actually, we need you to come back over to the group for your safety.
I
Again, I paid you people to guard me and follow my orders. Why should I do anything for you?
Because you're making my job harder. That's the problem. So, we actually have reason to believe that you're not safe right now. And you've paid me to keep you alive. Which I'm really intent on doing.
He's still just licking the pen.
This crane doesn't seem to be quite in working order. As well as the fact that that rope is probably attached to something that could really, really cause you a lot of problems. So
this expedition has cost more money for the Empire than anything else I've ever seen in my life. This is my life's work.
Your life's work may have been murdered recently.
Marshalot, that was great. It gave me chills, dude. That was great.
She's just like trying to be so gentle, but also very. There's a lack of social skills.
Yeah, mushroom. Yeah, mushroom, totally.
I need you to understand. She like looks around. We found bodies. I need you to come this way. We need to make sure that you stay alive.
And he just sighs, takes a long cleansing breath, and this jet of steam comes out. The guy is still, he's almost like a horse work to a lather because of how disgusting he feels and the work that he's put in, even at the back of the line. Just, it's one of the curses of his people. He doesn't even say anything else to you. He just whips around, shoves the pen in the book, closes the book, shoves it in the back pocket, yanks his cloak around him closer, and stumbles back to the group.
Right, we'll try to have this sorted shortly, but until then.
Mm-hmm. So all of you come back together. The wolf mother and daughter have still not approached you again. And at this point, if you care to look, you'll notice that at this point, the mother has knelt down and the two are embracing. And that's all you know. That's all you hear.
We don't need to know more than that. That's a personal moment.
Okay. Now.
If they look over, Bruno gives a signal that just says, take your time. Come back when you're ready.
At this point, I would argue that the only people in the world that exist is the mother, the daughter, and the person they lost.
Hey, thanks for listening to this presentation of Eschabelle Tolls. If you'd like to support what we're doing, you can give us a 5-star rating wherever you listen to podcasts, and subscribe to our Ko-fi for as little as $2 a month. When you do more than $5 a month, you can submit a description for an NPC, an opposing adventurer, hero, or even a god to inhabit the world of the story. It's our little way of saying thank you for supporting and listening to our project. So, thanks again. We'll see you the next time the bell tolls for our adventure.